Welcome to Matters of Experience. My name is Abigail Honor.
Hello, this is Brenda Cowan.
This podcast is produced by Laura Mipsum in New York City and explores the creativity, innovation, and psychology driving design, experiences, and encounters. Hello to anybody listening for the first time, and welcome back to our regular listeners. So today, our guest is my friend Brandon Harp, Director of Digital Experiences at McCann Systems Experiential Technology Practice. He works at the crossroads of media, architecture, technology, and storytelling, which I think is the real sweet spot right now, and for the past 15 years has focused his interest in how humans interact with digital displays, how technology enhances and activates brands, and how media speaks to and influences audience. Brandon, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Abby. Thanks for having me, and Brenda, I really appreciate it.
Oh, we are so delighted to have you. And to kickstart off, I know that you have an early sort of origin story to the work that you're currently doing, and I thought I would share an early memory of mine, which is making an exhibit in my bedroom when I was probably about 6 years old, and it was because I had found a small toy that I was convinced was the Loch Ness Monster. And I was so overjoyed by this that I decided that the very best thing to do to share this wealth of information and to celebrate the toy was to construct an exhibition in my bedroom. So the rest actually is history for me. What about you, Brandon?
Well, I don't know that my story is as good as yours, Brenda. I mean, who doesn't like the Loch Ness Monster?
Who doesn't indeed?
But for me, it actually started, as a young kid, I had always wanted to be and had ambitions of being an architect. And so I remember I was at the store with my mother and I convinced her to buy me a book of floor plans. And I used to take those floor plans and mark them up with various different colors and highlighters and things and kind of expand on the floor plans as if I was putting an addition on a house and things like that. So I've always had kind of this dream, I guess, of being an architect. And so now my work has taken me in the direction of audiovisual and how does media fit within spaces and spatial planning? And, you know, how does essentially the technology work with the architecture to tell stories and so forth? So it's kind of come full circle for me, which is kind of exciting.
One of the things I wanted to chat about is we talked earlier with the architect Alex Bittus about the importance of bathrooms. And now and again, it crops up in our podcast, this theme, because it's a personal favorite of mine. I really think it's an underrated space. And so when we were chatting earlier, you have sort of a very nice epiphany moment, which I can really appreciate, linked to being in a bathroom. And it's not going to be...
The listeners are definitely interested now.
It's not going to go to a bad place. So, you know, tell me about your epiphany story.
Actually, I have two good bathroom stories, believe it or not. So we'll get real spicy here. My first one was when I first encountered digital signage, which is really where I started my career. It was in a bathroom, believe it or not. And I was using the urinal and staring at the screen that was changing, and it was showing advertisements of, you know, that bar that I was at, I believe, and maybe, you know, something else, and then it would change and rotate. And it, you know, really got me thinking that, you know, this is the wave of the future, right? I guess my other bathroom story while we're on this topic, which is kind of funny, is, you know, if you haven't been to Summit One Vanderbilt, they actually have some of the most amazing bathrooms. And it's because as part of the observation deck experience, you get to actually look out over the city from very high up in the air for these full glass windows. It's an amazing view and an amazing bathroom, really, just because of the way that it was designed and the experience that's involved in that. So I guess moral of the story is you can have an experience in a bathroom.
You absolutely can.
See, it's catching on. But just because you've just mentioned it, do you want to talk just now before we keep going about that project, seeing as you mentioned it, because I know you guys worked on it?
Sure. Well, without giving it away, because I would encourage everyone to go see it and experience it for yourself. I think, you know, it's easy in our world of audiovisual to get sucked into, you know, just focusing on the video element of things. And the vision that Kenzo Digital had, who was the immersive artist, was truly exceptional. It came to him in a dream. He presented it to Mark Holliday, the CEO of SL Green. And you have video mixed with audio and interactives and sight and sound and smell and art and all these things just kind of come together and really just blend so well. You get this, just this multi-sensory sort of experience that just changes your perception and your view. And you could be a New Yorker and go there and love every minute of that. You could be from another country around the world and go there and love every minute of it. And it's never the same thing twice, which is really what's interesting about it. And, you know, a project like that that was under a grueling timeline, constantly changing of design and so forth, really just trying to stay, you know, ahead of it, ahead of the design and being agile and limber enough to do so as a company. You know, we stayed on schedule during COVID, and there were so many just things I think that could have adversely gone wrong that for us just didn't. I don't know if it was a stroke of luck, but maybe there was a little bit of that in there, but it was also, I think, just the sheer ambition of what it was that we were creating and, you know, knowing that the outcome was just going to be that incredible. So we were just constantly pushing to get to that finish line. And now it is truly something. It still gives me goosebumps when I think about it. It's, to me, it's something that certainly lights up my life, makes me happy every time I think about it. And I've loved and still enjoy sharing it with anybody who's either hasn't been there or maybe has been, but wants just a different experience. So
it sounds so amazing. And I also appreciate how you use New Yorkers as even a New Yorker.
Right.
I have to ask you, you know, you're describing such an ideal situation in terms of the client being in alignment with you and with all of the different companies and individuals involved in the process. And what a wonderful rarity. And I have to ask, you know, you work on huge projects in major cities, you weave technology into our everyday. Give us a hit of a challenging project. How do you creatively solve issues when things aren't necessarily going so well?
You know, oftentimes the challenges are just getting past, you know, what is the technology to create the experience? Because in our world, and the approach that I take and McCann Systems takes is that there's more to it than just the video wall, right? And it's easy for clients and designers and architects and so forth to say, well, hey, I need to understand what it's going to take from a budgetary perspective to be able to put something like this in, right? Everybody wants the sphere nowadays. That's great, but your budget doesn't necessarily support that in a lot of cases. So it's something that, you know, we try to advise our clients on at a very early stage, that there's more to it than just the technology. The technology, we will get it to do what you want it to do, but let's peel the onion back a little bit. Let's take a step back. Let's take the technology off the table and let's engage with the right partners, right? Let's talk about the content. Let's talk about the storytelling. Let's talk about the experience, you know, the human interaction, as I always say, because what is it at the end of the day that you want people to feel? And I think that's, you know, going about things that way has been very, very successful for me in my career, but also, you know, for the companies that I work for, because they understand that and it helps the client really dig deeper, right? Because if you're just looking at the surface, which to me is the black LED screen, it's a square or a box on a wall in a lot of cases, you need to be able to understand, you know, and have a strategy, you know, a content strategy, and what is the experience and how does the journey flow through the space. And if you think about those things, you know, you're able to overcome a lot of design challenges, you're able to overcome a lot of the guesswork that comes with trying to establish budgets and things like that. But it also gives the client, I think, a real peace of mind that they know you are an expert at this and they're hiring the right person for the right, all the right reasons.
So switching, you were recently on a panel at DOOH conference, and the discussion was about privacy. And I wanted to talk a little bit more about that and share with our listeners that phenomenon that we're all very happy to share everything with our phone, our name, our phone number, our social security, date of birth, you name it, we'll share it. But when it comes to larger screens, people, the public seem to get really creeped out by the suggestion that a large screen could sort of see them and respond to them. When I'm thinking about the great strides in technology we've made, where we could actually build these screens to dim if there aren't a lot of people there to save energy, or dim at nighttime when there's nobody there. And so we can actually make them sensitive to humans and when we're there and not there. And even just from a sustainability perspective, that's good. But we don't want any of that, right? Human nature is seeming, and we were chatting a lot about that at the conference. So, you know, what's your spin on that and perspective on that? Do you think that we'll get over ourselves and we'll be getting tracked by all these screens? Or, you know, I'd love for you to share your thoughts, Brandon.
It's always an interesting topic because, you know, how many times have you just been sitting there at night with your husband or wife or partner and you're talking or whatever, and you mention something, and then all of a sudden you look at your phone and it's like, oh, Google is listening to me because now there's an ad for, you know, whatever it was that you're talking about. So, you know, I think, yes, there's a lot of that on your personal device. And there can be a lot of it out in the wild too, right? In public spaces and so forth. I think what you're seeing is places where tracking of individuals moving through spaces, understanding their, you know, whether they're a male or a female, their height, you know, how happy they are they smiling, are they not smiling, tracking those kinds of things. I think a lot of that nowadays is anonymous, which is good because really it's just all about taking that data and then being able to repurpose it or reuse it in a way that it can influence something else. And as somebody who, you know, really loves all things digital signage, call me a nerd or whatever, but I do like the data aspect of it, right? And taking data and utilizing that to influence decision-making, but also in the art world, I think a good example of that would be, you know, Rafik Anadol. Everyone knows Rafik, right? For his work with the machine learning and the data visualizations. I mean, he's taking data and turning that into art. And I think there's something very powerful about that. And a lot of different clients that we have are asking about those kinds of things. How can we take financial data or metrics from something and be able to present it in a way that it creates a really unique kind of inviting ambiance, maybe in a lobby or something of that nature, and then present it back to those people, right? But it's totally anonymous, right? It doesn't infringe on you as a person. It doesn't know who you are. It's just gathering of data and repurposing it in ways that's pretty exciting.
If I was running a museum and I spent a bunch of money on my brand new build, I would probably want to get anonymous data of what's working, where people are hanging out, what they're responding to. Or even you might want to put it in to be able, Brandon, to explain to your client, look what's working really well, what we did here works or doesn't work. I'm assuming that everybody would like data so that they can learn and improve.
Yeah, I'm thinking of a billion different things, and I'm really sad that I wasn't at the DOOH conference because I do have so many mixed feelings about this as well, and far too many dinner table conversations with my husband about all of this because, yes, we also call us nerdy, talk about this quite a bit. But in terms of, even Abby, what you were just asking about in terms of, you know, museums or any kind of place wanting to be able to share data and also collect data about people's responses to spaces and stuff like that, I think about a topic that came up at the SEGD XLab conference that we were all just at, and the question about a return on emotion. And the sort of, there was a mini conversation, if you all caught it, about, you know, some folks thinking that you can't even really get that kind of data from people. And for me, that's the data that I would be most interested in really understanding. And Brandon, I'm wondering if you have specific thoughts about the idea of return on emotion. Do you see that as data that is able to be collected and, you know, because emotion is a part of what it is that you strive to work with and be sensitive to and understand and utilize within your own work?
Everything that we do in terms of designing systems and installing them and servicing them is to provoke emotions at the end of the day. And if it's a part of an attraction or even if it's just something in a lobby where people are passing by, it's intended to create an emotion. We recently did a project that we did was for Mercer Labs here in New York City. It's an immersive environment that's got kind of the feel of an art gallery and an experience, just experiential spaces that really also captivate all of the senses. We had a partner who is testing out these wristbands that you can wear. And ultimately what it does is it picks up on brain waves rather than heartbeats and things like that, and utilizing an app with this wristband. Once you make your way through this, all the spaces, which took about an hour, we were provided with this data as to your level of immersion. And your level of immersion is, you know, tied directly to emotion, right? And how you're feeling about that space. So it's interesting to see the data on that. And I found it interesting because prior to going into those spaces with the wristband, I kind of had it in my head, the ones where I would feel that emotion really the highest or the greatest, I guess. And in some cases, it wasn't always the case. So it was interesting. I think that it's still kind of in its infancy stage, but I think it does, that anonymous data does lead towards something, right? And we know mm-hmm. that it does help understand our emotions and our level of immersion as we are in these spaces, which is great. And if we can use that as part of actionable design and coming mm-hmm. up with new ways of, you know, helping people create spaces that are truly immersive like that, that every space really gets your senses up and generates this amazing feeling, then, you know, maybe we're onto something.
I think it's so rich and potent. And I think that as a tool for designers and as a tool for developers and planners, it would be so valuable to be able to have as best an understanding as possible about immersion and, you know, the level of engagement and the types of engagement, but also the intensity of emotion that we could, you know, reasonably anticipate, you know, from my perspective, you know, so that we could be particularly sensitive to how it is that we're telling our stories and how we can be the most effective with a really deep awareness of being able to, frankly, help people and support people as much as get our message across in a way that's really going to be comprehensive.
So we're going to move to airports. So we've done some large projects in airports, large media projects. And I want to talk about airports because I know you, Brandon, have done some large projects. It's like a new canvas. You know, you have people, unlike I think in a museum when they're going to a museum to absorb content, you have them going to an airport to travel somewhere else. And so actually absorbing content or being ready to be told a story is very much secondary, even if not thirdly or fourthly on their agenda of why they're at the airport. And so it's a really interesting playground and place to be able to tell this episodic stories. Can you tell us about one of your airport projects and where you see the sort of canvas going in the future?
Yeah, the airports, you know, really seem to be a place that, you know, we can utilize this technology that we deal with on a day-to-day basis to help set the mode and set the tone for the experience that you're about to have. And I've been talking about this theory of a connected journey, as I like to call it. And it, for me, it begins as soon as you get out of your Uber or someone drops you off on the sidewalk and you start to make your way, you know, through TSA to get to your gate, onto your plane, off your plane, go pick up your bag and then get back into an Uber or a taxi, or even taking it a step further all the way to your final destination. But, you know, for me, I think in an airport, what really is important is giving people real-time information at the right place so that they don't have to search for, you know, the schedule on the app for that specific airline or for that specific, you know, terminal or anything like that. So to me, it's about giving people kind of the right information at the right time, because in general, airports can be overwhelming. They can be a feeling of negativity, right? You're maybe upset because your plane is a little delayed. So how do you change that? And I think that's what we, as people who design and build and service these systems, we strive for, is to put, you know, as corny as it sounds, a smile on people's faces. And if you do that, in turn, you're creating new revenue channels, right? Because they are a little more happy now. They're feeling a little more euphoric. They're feeling more comfortable in their surrounding environment. And therefore, they're going to get something to eat and they're going to spend more money, or they're going to go into one of the stores there, the retail stores, and buy a new outfit or a new you know, piece of luggage or something, right? To just because they're feeling that way. So I think it's the connectedness of that passenger journey. And, you know, there are ways of still really interacting with people in fun, playful ways. Maybe it's a video wall that has some sort of depth sensing camera that just kind of walks with you and kind of leads you down a path or leads you in the direction that you need to go towards the baggage claim. And maybe it waves at you or blows you a kiss or does something that, you know, just kind of interacts with you to kind of put a smile on your face and keep you moving through the space, but multifunctional too. Even, you know, wayfinding is always a big element of an airport. And to me, that's one of the first things I notice is if I find the wayfinding to be cumbersome or challenging or just, you know, not legible for in some cases, you know, how can you utilize a screen like that that could be interactive, but also lead you to a certain destination, right? And how does it get you from point A to point B? So I think those are all things that are kind of a part of that connected journey and a lot of just kind of the recent things that we're seeing in trends and ways of engaging people with digital displays throughout airports.
I have to ask, so we're talking about artistry and we're talking about being able to envision environments that are, you know, highly, highly aesthetic, emotion rich, and sculptural. Who on your team, please tell me there's somebody on your team who brings pencil to paper in these early stages to really envision these kinds of applications and environments? I'm so curious. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there sure is. You know, we've got some really bright people that work for us. Ken Newberry is our CTO. We've got Ryan Pally, who just joined the company, who's I've been working with for years. And I'll give those guys a shout out just because I work with them quite a bit on this little experiential island, as we call it, that we live on. They understand this technology. They know it very well. And they're very good at doing exactly like you said, Brenda, these little napkin sketches are helping a client, you know, think through, okay, what is this use case? What's the application? How can we do something here that's unique and really offers an inviting solution, something that we can all be proud of. So I think from an engineering standpoint, they're the brains. They know this kind of stuff really well.
We love people like them.
You have to have them, but they also have that creative gene too, which is important. And not everybody has that, I think, but it is important to have the, you know, kind of marry the two, right? And creativity with engineering often don't go together that well. So finding people that do have that sort of, you know, blend of both skill sets, I think, is really what makes us effective and as a company.
Well, and kudos to you, Brandon, because, you know, the way you approach what you do is it's a lot of custom work. It's a lot of things that maybe haven't been done before. And so you and your company are very willing to work with designers and make, as you did, dreams come true, literally. And, you know, that takes a lot of courage from the company you work for. So where do you get the chutzpah from to do that?
I think it's always been in our DNA, Abby. I mean, when I joined McCann about 6 months ago, you know, something that really struck me was that the company has always had the feeling and kind of wherewithal to not say no to things because they're challenging, right? In fact, it's quite the opposite for us. We like that challenge. We like to take on the projects that others just simply don't think can be done or refuse to do because they see it as, you know, too risky, or we just don't have the right kind of personnel to give it a try. So for us, I think, you know, that to me was a breath of fresh air, right? And that's kind of what we've always been known for and how we've always gone about our business as a company. So yeah, there's not much that scares us, if anything, I guess. But, you know, if there's a will, there's a way. And I think, you know, McCann is always good at looking at that to find the solution for the client.
Thank you so much, Brandon, for bringing
us onto
your experiential island today. It's been
really
fun.
Thank you for having me. It was so much fun. And I hope the listenership gets something out of it. It's so inspiring to be a part of this community that we have. You know, there's so many brilliantly smart people out there who, if you can just take a little bit from every person and sort of apply that in different ways, I think it's a great way of doing things. So always keep learning, always keep being creative and imagining, and it's all possible.
Hear, hear.
Thanks to everyone who tuned in today. If you like what you heard, subscribe for more episodes of Masters of Experience wherever you listen to podcasts. Make sure to leave a rating and a review, and please share with a friend. We'll see you next time.
Thank you so much, everyone.
Matters of Experience is produced by Lorem Ipsum Corp. and recorded at Hanger Studios. Tune in next time for more fun discussions about experience design.